All right. Agenda item number six, the Guadalupe Settlement Fund. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you. This has to do with the use of funds from the Guadalupe Settlement Fund, specifically for our regulation of the discharges from agricultural operations. And I was expecting to see Jill here. Are you filling in?
Yeah, Jill's been delayed. She's on her way. She's been delayed. And so I'm just going to start off with the cooperative monitoring program part of it.
Okay. We were going to have both Allison Jones and Jill Wilson. So as you heard, we'll start with Allison instead. Thanks, Allison.
Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Allison Jones. I'm the lead staff on the conditional waiver for irrigated lands. And today I'm here to discuss the funding, Guadalupe Settlement funds that were used, approved last year to support student resources to help staff with the ag waiver program, getting things up and running, and then the funds that the board approved for the cooperative monitoring program. Jill Wilson was delayed, so she's going to be covering the part about the student resources, and I'm going to be talking about the cooperative monitoring phase one contract. So, excuse me, I'm just going to skip to my part of the presentation.
While you're skipping, can everybody see that okay without me dimming the lights? Okay.
Is that all right? It is kind of hard to see, I think.
Is that all right?
There we go. A little better.
Little tip on PowerPoint, don't use white at the bottom. All right. You received a supplemental sheet, and I apologize to the board because it seems like it's the story of this program. We're always sort of doing changes and making adjustments as we go along. It's kind of the way the program is when you're short-staffed and running up against deadlines and time frames where sometimes we have to make changes. So the good change is that I got some better budget information, and that enabled me to reevaluate our proposal to add additional $30,000. And based on that assessment, we do not need any additional funds for the program. What we do need is additional flexibility in moving funds between tasks. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But I believe there's sufficient money in the current contract to complete all the tasks, and we just need to be able to move some money around. As you recall, the cooperative monitoring program is being run by a group of agricultural organizations, the agricultural industry in the Central Coast. A year ago in July, when the board adopted the conditional waiver, 23 ag groups came together and made the commitment to implement the cooperative monitoring program on behalf of agriculture in the region. It was a required component of the waiver, of course. And the board agreed to help them get the program up and running, since it was such a new concept and something that hadn't been done before, with settlement funds. So in December of 2004, the board approved $622,321 out of the Guadalupe funds and $250,000 out of PG&E settlement funds to assist the industry in getting their monitoring program up and running and doing monitoring in 25 of the mandated 50 sites for the first year. So that's the phase one part of this. 10 sites in the Santa Maria watershed and 15 sites in the lower Salinas area. I sometimes think the word challenges is overused. Sometimes I think things are just hard. And I would say that this past year in trying to get this program up and running, it's been very difficult and has had a lot of challenges. It's a new program. There's no existing model for it. We have a large region and a diverse agriculture in the region, and it's highly technical. And agriculture in general, most farmers have not had experience doing water quality monitoring. So in many ways, even though they have consultants to do the technical part of it, to understand it and be able to manage that kind of a program takes a lot of work and a lot of effort on people's parts to try to understand what it's all about. And I particularly have empathy with them because we're, in some ways, it mirrors our own struggles. We're setting up a new program at the regional board. You lose a key staff person and it sets you back months. So I have a lot of empathy with what they've been dealing with. And also, as Benny Jefferson, one of the participants said last year at the board meeting when the board adopted the waiver, to get 23 agricultural organizations to get together and agree on anything is quite an accomplishment. So I think a lot has been done. They have established their infrastructure. They have a nonprofit in place now, committees both to address the cost allocation and the monitoring aspects of the program. They have conducted the 9 months of water quality monitoring, submitted data in electronic format to us, and they've adopted a cost allocation structure. So a lot has been accomplished. I think there have been a number of factors that have increased their costs, especially in the administrative part of the program. There is an early decision to have northern and southern branches of all committees. I think that increased costs in terms of staff time, in terms of maybe communication difficulties. So it caused a lot of extra meetings, extra discussions, and I think in some cases. Of course, I'm a bit on the outside looking in, so I don't have the full understanding of it, but from what I've seen, I think that decision has increased their costs and probably made communication more difficult and made reaching decisions a bit more difficult. They chose an executive director that did not live inside the region and was not from the ag industry, and I think that maybe increased costs in that they're just less communication, less hands-on. They have had some struggles making clear decisions and having procedures in place and protocols, so I think that's something that has also increased costs in that if decisions aren't made, you're sort of revisiting some issues over and over, and it's made it a little bit more difficult to move forward. They've had staffing changes, and again, some of those organizational issues of how do you make decisions and how do you move forward. Having said that, though, I believe that they've had excellent staff, especially the technical program managers have been outstanding and dedicated. They are working toward adopting some clearer procedures, and I think once that's in place, that it'll make things easier and it'll allow them over time to cut down on some of these administrative costs. They're talking about combining committees. We are also talking to them about their staffing structure and some ways that might be improved. And also we'll be working with them on reviewing both this budget, the remainder of this budget, and then their upcoming phase two contracts with the state with Prop 40 and Prop 50 funds. So I think all of those things we're moving in a positive direction. There are several remaining tasks. They still need to do the required follow-up part of the contract and of the monitoring program. So we're going to be meeting next week to move forward on that. They need to revise their quality assurance plan to reflect both the follow-up and then the phase two monitoring sites, add those additional 25 sites on. The follow-up has to be conducted and then a lot of grower outreach to try to explain the results of the monitoring. They need to issue bills to the participants, so that's something that we're working with them on as well.
And bills for what, Ms. Jones?
Bills for the phase two, essentially. The phase two grants require matching funds, and also they need to both provide match and also to get people contributing to the program. So as this becomes a more self-sustaining program and they phase out the grants, and when the grant money is gone, this needs to be self-sustaining. So they're going to start billing this year. That's why they got their cost allocation done, so they can start billing participants.
And so they have kind of resolved how much each of their mm-hmm. individual members is going to be assessed?
Yeah, they've agreed on a cost allocation formula. Okay. So that was a major accomplishment.
Yeah, both the north and south?
It was a combined, so it's a region-wide. Yeah. As I said, our main need right now is to be able to move some funds around. What we found was when I finally was able to look at some of the bid numbers, the actual contractor's bid numbers, that helped me get a better idea of where there's shortfall and where there's room to move money. A couple of tasks were underfunded significantly. Task two, the monitoring data management, just doing the quality checking and the electronic submittals. From the beginning, for whatever reason, the numbers that went into the contract did not reflect what the subcontractor thought it would cost. So we need to adjust there. It's underfunded by about $19,000. Administration, again, as I said, there's been lots of costs associated with getting the program up and running. So The projection is that there could potentially be a shortfall by the end of about $76,000. That's probably a little bit high, but it should reflect the need for the rest of the contract. And that includes past things that haven't been billed for yet. So over the total contract, there looks like a shortfall in administration of about $76,500. So a total shortfall in these two tasks of about $96,000. But when I was able to sit down with all the numbers and look at it, task one, sampling, there was some excess money there compared to the bid. And under the current contract, we're limited to what we can move to 10% of any particular line item or task. So under this task, the amount of money that's available to be moved would be about 21% of that task. And so I need to be able to increase the percentage that could be moved. Task three in reports. We didn't require a lot of reporting. They estimated that the contractor estimated a certain amount for reports, and somehow there was more money put in that task. So I think about $12,000 there can be moved, and that represents about 21% of that task. When we looked at the follow-up monitoring, the northern follow-up monitoring follow-up is supposed to be 25% of the sampling and analysis part of the budget. When we calculated it originally, we calculated it on both the sampling analysis and the reports and those things, and that doesn't really need to be included in the 25%. So when staff recalculated that, when we did our initial budgeting, we actually reduced that amount to about $93,000, but somehow when the contract was put together, it was raised again. So we have an excess in that particular task. So what that means is we could move about $36,000 out of that task, still complete the follow-up monitoring, and have enough money there to do that. And that represents about 45% of what we put into that particular task. And then finally, setting up the Preservation Inc., the nonprofit, and the Ag Committee, there was money put in there that hasn't been used, and that could be moved, and that's about $13,000, and that represents about 25% of that particular task. So the total that I estimate is there's about $99,000 available to be moved around, which represents about 16% of the total contract amount. So what I propose is that we add approve adding $60,000 to the amount that staff can move between tasks. So right now the board gave us authority to move $40,000. If we can add $60,000 to that, so that makes the total $100,000, that'll be enough money. I can move the money around to cover these remaining shortfalls. And then increase the percentage of the budget item that we can move from 10% to 50% of any particular item. And that'll allow me to move the money from, say, the follow-up where there's a 45% excess into a different task, into the administrative task. Is that clear?
Yes.
So there's what really needs to be done as far as administration, and why there's money is needed there is revising the quality assurance plan, overseeing monitoring, doing some of this outreach and issuing bills, and then finalizing the upcoming phase two contracts. So there is definitely a need for some staff time to be put into this. And I'm going to stop there because Jill Wilson has come in. I'm going to let her do her portion of it, and then we'll come back to our recommendation.
Good morning, Chairman Young and board members. I'll be presenting to you second half of our presentation, which is for funding for student needs for the agricultural waiver program. So Allison just finished presenting to you the cooperative monitoring program, asking for flexibility to the contract. And I'll be talking to you about student funding needs for the ag waiver program. Let's see. The Guadalupe Fund has been a very important aspect to the startup of this program. In December of 2004, the board approved $20,000 for student funding from the Guadalupe Settlement Fund. Prior to that, the ag waiver was approved in July of 2004, and prior to that, in July of 2003, is when the blueprint for use of the Guadalupe Settlement Fund was approved by the board. And today I'm here to request renewal of that student funding, and we're looking for an increase from $20,000 to $30,000. That's a 50% increase in funds that will help to allow our students to work more hours. Currently, they're limited by the current budget. They're able to work more hours, but the funding's not there to allow them to do so. And it also includes a 5% raise to help with retention, so that we don't have to go through the learning curve and retraining the students.
How much do they make, by the way?
They make $12 an hour. And the result from that would be decreased time in getting back to the farmers, so improved service to farmers, and then also we'll have staff so we're not spread so thin and allow staff more time to focus on the technical aspects of the program. This program is quite a large program. Allison Jones showed this chart to you last time at the last board meeting. So do we have a laser anywhere? No? Okay. Well, you can just see on the y-axis shows the number of permits. And then on the x-axis, we have the NPDES, that's non-stormwater permit program with just under 200 enrollees. We have waste discharge requirements, just under 400. Stormwater NPDES permits with about 1,000 enrollees. And the Ag Waiver Program is the largest program that this board administers to, with 1,600 enrollees. With such a large program, student support is critical to the ongoing success of this type of program. The students work with database input, filing and record retention, and outreach and general program support. For more detail on those tasks, you can look on your staff report. In 2005, the students input quite a lot of data. They input 1,600 applicants or NOIs, 2,500, that represents 2,500 owners and or operators, and then management practice for each individual ranch for those operations.
Ms. Wilson, who up here?
Yes.
Who checks the input? Once the students input the data for the first go around, is there some quality control over that?
Yes, they actually go through and they will check themselves compared to the paper file. So they'll do their own checking, and then also we have data management staff, and the data management staff will put it through the computer, and they can tell, like a red flag will jump out if something looks erroneous through the just programming and being able to put it in and double check that way. You can check numbers, you can check addresses, and we've done quite a bit of that and actually have been able to find some errors in the database that we've been actively correcting.
Well, that when data management staff is doing that function, mm-hmm. are they actually comparing the raw data sheet with what's in the computer?
No, the students will compare the raw data sheet to what's in the computer, and then the data manager will actually be able to tell if the numbers are making sense. They can compare. We have many ways to compare the numbers to each other, and if something doesn't look right, then we'll go back and look at the paper. Yeah, sure. And then we also do quite a lot of large mailings. So we do mailings of up to 2,500 individual mailings, and while we're doing the mailings, part of that, it's almost an automatic check, because part of the mailings, we also have to go back and check, our data and check the information. It doesn't look like I'm not giving you enough
information.
No,
I understand what you're doing. My concern is that we just make sure that accurate data, or the data is put in accurately.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I've punched in lots of numbers myself in databases, and I know how you can transpose numbers, get them mixed up, and if you have the same pair of eyes redoing what's already been done,
right,
you could even overlook your own mistakes.
Okay, I understand
so
now.
That's
sure.
Just my concern about that.
Right, and we have a mailing going out next week, actually, where we're putting the numbers to the farmers, and we're telling them the numbers that we have. And so it's all going to be automated, and the computer's going to generate the numbers that are in our database, and then we're asking for verification from the individual farmers that these numbers are accurate. Because then that will help facilitate the fee collection from the cooperative monitoring program.
Okay. And do the student inputters have any sheet that they sign off or check off that, you know, they went ahead and did their review?
Do they have a sheet? Is that your question?
Yeah, a checklist.
They finalize. They don't necessarily have a checklist, no.
Okay.
They will finalize, go through the database, and then when they have all their data in, they'll check a box that says it's finalized.
Okay.
Okay, so also in 2005, we did quite a lot of large mailings, as I've been discussing. And then the students have helped with, we've learned to expect up to 200 calls in response to those large mailings per week. And so those students have been very critical in helping us reply to farmers' questions and also follow-up calls. This is what 1,600 applications and 2,500 owners and operators look like. In 2006, the students will be tasked with creating a hard copy filing system and also an e-filing system for these records. And the scope of work for the students in 2006 includes verifying non-filers. That will also include quite a bit of research and information gathering in order to allow staff to move forward with that. Large mailings seems to be a way of life with this program. So there will be continued large mailings. As I mentioned, there's one going out next week. They will also be responding to, in January 1st is the first annual report that's due, and there'll be 1,100 annual reports and also data entry associated with those reports. And that's the end of my discussion. And then you want me to move to the recommendations? Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Shalcross.
Yeah, I have a couple of quick questions on
sure.
that. You said were you having trouble with student retention based on pay?
We're not having trouble with student retention. Students in general, we have some really good students right now. I can't get to the recommendation slide. Okay, thanks. And we just want to be able to have an incentive for those students to stay with us.
Okay.
So we just.
And how much discretion do we have, on how much we pay the students, or is that some sort of standard, industry standard, or?
No, we went last year. The board approved the $12 an hour for student funding, and it's also based on what we pay students in the office. I think it's the higher end of what we pay.
Okay,
students cool. in the office.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And so, in conclusion, I would be recommending that the board approve the $30,000 for student funding resources for 2006 from the Guadalupe Settlement Fund. Okay, and then also approve of the additional budget flexibility for the cooperative monitoring program phase one contract, and that includes increasing the total amount staff can move between tasks by $60,000 and increasing the percentage staff can move between budget items from 10% to 50%.
Okay, I don't have any speaker cards, but I see Mr. Schmidt here. Would you like to chime in, tell us how things are coming along?
Chairman Young, members of the board, I'm Kirk Schmidt, the executive director of Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc., or Preservation, Inc., as it's euphemistically known. Allison is correct. We've had some growing issues. More or less, the entity started out as a confusion between two separate entities, Preservation, Inc., and the Ag Committee that was set up by the agricultural organizations. This is being resolved so that there's clarity of focus by both the agricultural organizations and by Preservation, Inc. Preservation, Inc.'s role, as you know, is solely to operate and manage and bill for the cooperative monitoring program, which is going along well. We are getting the data into your offices. We've had some delays, and we've had some submittals that have been early. We have to get a little more regularity, and in general, if there was any problem that you could describe with Preservation, Inc., it was not focused on overall organization in the past. It was initially set up with a unconsolidated group of independent contractors, everybody from the executive director to the to Larry Walker & Associates, who's doing the monitoring, to the CPA. This was a very expensive way to set up the organization and did not create any inherent efficiencies of operation. In order to help bring this matter into budget, in order to get the budget so Allison can characterize it as being fully funded, as long as she can move greater sums of money around, has greater discretion to move money around, we had to change the way we were going to prepare and send out bills. Dave Paradis of your office has been very helpful, not only in organizing the database and preparing for a letter that will go out this next week to all the people who submitted NOIs as participants in the cooperative monitoring program. But he's also generated a program that will allow us to bill from your database very easily and inexpensively. This is going to save us, in our estimate, at least $12,000, because we will be able to do this in-house. We're going to change from having a CPA do this to hiring a part-time bookkeeper to manage the bills, and also somebody then is responsible for receiving the funds and can keep track of it if an individual participant in the cooperative monitoring program calls up and wants to know what happened to their check. As we've been careful to point out along, Preservation, Inc. is not responsible for the generation or input of the database or enforcement of participation in the program. However, we will be communicating the names of the farm companies that are participating by way of sending a check to Preservation, Inc. after they have already indicated on their NOI that they will be participating in the cooperative monitoring program. Some of the reallocation of funds that Allison talked about, particularly in the administrative side, were a result of miscategorization of billings from Larry Walker Associates on account of monitoring that correctly just should be recategorized as monitoring. And I do not believe it's necessary to rationalize that as a movement of funds. It just needs to be a correction of the way the funds were applied. For reasons that are beyond me, the administration process at Larry Walker Associates that was solely related to monitoring, that should have been attributed to monitoring, ended up in the administration category, which totally distorted the administration category. And I think just by replacing that where it logically should go would do a lot to bring us closer to where the initial budget was. There is a minor dispute regarding $12,500, however, and Allison's characterization of where the funds are was based on the assumption that this $12,500 would be found, recovered, or somehow reimbursed to Preservation, Inc. And the issue is more than just a issue of organizational relations of parties. When the CFMC funds, the Monterey County Foundation funds, were initially granted, Preservation, Inc. did not exist, and there was not a nonprofit that could receive the funds. Growers and Shippers Association in Salinas received the funds. And of the first, this is a $250,000 grant. Of the first $125,000, they took a 10% fee because of the process of handling the funds, of generating the paperwork to apply for the funds, the administration of dealing with this aspect of it. This item was not called out in the budget as part of that grant, and it presents a very awkward circumstance for both the Community Foundation and for Growers Shippers, because they have board members that serve on both boards, and it's difficult for one board to ask the other to resolve this without having an inherent conflict of interest due to the overlapping of the boards. I think at the time the money was granted, given the fact that Preservation Inc. didn't exist, it seems reasonable that Grower Shipper Association took the position that they have taken. However, if that money remains with Grower Shippers, it would leave a hole in the budget by about $12,000. And I'm, you know, this third party who's watching the positions of everybody regarding where this is, and there is no pending resolution on that one issue.
Is there anything that the staff or board can do to help push it into a resolution mode?
Well, I've talked to Jim Bogard and also to Don Mathis. Jim Bogard is the president of Grower Shipper, and Don Mathis was the consultant who worked with Grower Shipper to write the original grant application. And at the time, when the grant application was initially submitted, there was a overhead category that covered this $12,000. That between when it was submitted and when it was approved, that category got moved back into the overall grant fund. Hoping that there's a gift made by Grower Shipper back to us, I don't really have any reason to believe that we would be able to retrieve the money, because I think they took this money because it was appropriate given the fact they received the money from CFMC and the fact that they also did the original work on the contract and signed the original contract before it was assigned to Preservation Inc.
Okay. I think when you addressed us at the last board meeting, we got a heads up that there may be some budget shortfall based on your anticipated billing and need for funds, and I'd love to just hear where you're at with that.
The two different issues. One is whether or not we have sufficient funds from the Guadalupe funds and from the PG&E funds to finish phase one. The initial monitoring portion of phase one has been undertaken. The follow-up monitoring has not been specified, and the benthic testing, which would occur in the spring, has not been accomplished. So we have significant expenses that would be incurred on phase one as late as the spring of 2006. It appears that there's sufficient funding in the both the monitoring portion of the grants already and in the follow-up portions, particularly with the reallocation of the $30,000 from the follow-up monitoring, because it was overfunded initially. If you look at the math, it's clear that the Guadalupe funds, that side of it was overfunded. It was more than 25%. That will do a lot to make up for this. We are also changing the method of operation. There were some things that were, there wasn't sufficient frugality in the original budget. There was an assumption you would just contract everything out. To overcome that, we're going to see if we can rent a small office from the Watsonville Chamber of Commerce so we can have a location to send our billings out, hire a part-time bookkeeper to do this. This would save us significantly. We've changed the need for outreach has changed, and I believe that the managers who have conducted outreach have done a very good job, but the larger farmers are easy to find, And they've all been found, and they've all been participating, and there's no further need for outreach to this group because they've already been contacted, they're participating in the program. We don't have the existing format didn't allow us, wasn't designed for us to go beyond that as far as outreach. So we scaled back the outreach, and that has saved us significantly on the budget. As far as sending out the bills, we've cooperated with Allison, and they will be sending out a letter next week, as you're aware, requesting that the participants in the NOI verify their acreage and verify the information on their billing address, billing the company name, that's type of matter. We simplified the categorizations so that there are just two categories: one, irrigated acres, which is defined now in the letter that will be going out, and tailwater acres, which is irrigated water which flows off the farm. So if it's retained on the farm, it's not tailwater acre. This is more understandable to the farmers and will result in different numbers than originally. There were some data gaps originally in the forms, particularly the online form, as far as some of this data. So there was, as they say, extrapolation. We believe that if we get the bills out in the middle of December, which I believe is doable if the follow-up letter goes out next week and there's a response by December 1st, we should be able to get bills out before the first of the year, primarily because of the wonderful work Dave Paradis has done in coming up with a billing format for us that we can just drop into our computer and just send it out. We'll have proceeds coming in before the end of January. We would like to get the bills out before the end of the year because there are some farmers who would like to take a tax advantage by paying the bill in 2005 instead of 2006, and I'd like to give them that opportunity if it works. I mean, if it works for their taxes, it doesn't seem like it's anything other than a prudent thing on their behalf. So I would like to get these bills out. We have been communicating with the agriculture community. We sent out a newsletter a month ago. We will send out another newsletter after the revisions to the NOI letter goes out from your offices. The first newsletter is being translated into Spanish, and we hopefully will have better impact in the Hispanic community within Region 3. So we should be in good shape with Phase 2. There have been some changes in the Proposition 40 and Proposition 50 grants to allow greater flexibility in outreach and education. The most two recent short courses that were scheduled were canceled for lack of participation. This isn't because everybody is fully educated. This is because the people who are the easiest to find have already participated and taken the course. We have to change this and have more courses in Spanish, and we have to find those people who, whether they haven't heard about this program or are ignoring this program, to get them into this. But the change in the language in the grants allow us greater flexibility in how we accomplish this. Previously, you said you're going to have so many short courses. It's probably better that we have more flexibility so we can actually design courses that are going to be of most benefit, particularly after we get the results of the first year of monitoring.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries?
I don't have any questions for Kurt, but I do need Allison.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
And the question to Allison, if I understand you correctly, you want a total of $60,000 in flexibility for 40 plus 20? Is that what you're asking?
No, that was a change from the supplemental sheet.
So you're asking for an
additional? Total of $100,000.
Total of $100,000.
60 plus the existing 40, just what you originally said.
So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd move the staff's recommendation. And if there's any additional questions, I think I toyed with this number when we originally approved this, that I wanted more flexibility to the staff at that particular time. And my colleague tried to nail down a number, and I wasn't really sure what the number would be. But the number I was thinking about was $100,000 originally. So I would move we approve
Okay, let's see if there's any comments or questions.
Well, I'm sorry to have penned you in there.
All right, that's perfectly all right.
I'm also, it sounds fine for the 100,000. Just about the flexibility, you're proposing to increase from 10% to 50%. That seemed to make sense for the categories that you outlined. One was up to 45%, so 50% would give you a little margin. Are there other categories that were not on that list that would also be now subject to this 50% flexibility?
I don't believe so. I think those were the only tasks identified as being overfunded. So I wanted to apply to the whole thing, and you know, just in case we need to move something else. And the maximum is 50, so it could be, in most cases, be much less than that. But those were the main categories where identified there was extra funds.
Okay. Because on the face of it, 50%, if you looked at the whole issue, would be a great deal of, I mean, it's almost complete discretion. So,
right.
But you're thinking that this is really only going to apply to those categories that you mentioned.
Right, and that's why I totaled up the overall, about 16% right. of the overall, just so you're more comfortable with okay. how much is being actually moved around.
All right, thank you.
Although to be clear, the recommendation is for it to apply to every category, just
right.
that we don't foresee that necessarily have to exercise that, but just to have, again, to have the flexibility. That's right. the recommendation.
Okay.
Any additional board questions? Any member of the public wish to speak on this issue? Dr. Backer?
I just had a quick one. The previous speaker.
Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Schmidt.
He's behind the podium, yes. Can't see him. You were saying that you were cutting back on, suggested to cut back on outreach?
No, well, we're not cutting back.
Let me just go around the circle. You've got the big guys. Mm-hmm. You know who they are. How are we finding the leftovers, let's call them, both the smaller farmers and those that chose not to participate?
We were quite surprised by the response to the newsletter that we distributed. It was then redistributed by various agricultural organizations, including agricultural organizations that were not included in the original 23 ag organizations that helped create Preservation, Inc. That's given a very interesting response from farm organizations that typically would have signed up for the NOI if they knew about it originally. So we're picking up those categories. We had to change the type of outreach because the type of outreach that the two regional managers were conducting was not effective to the way it was being conducted thus far, was no longer effective to reach Hispanic growers or small farmers. And what we have changed is changed our communication both with ALBA, and ALBA is participating with the California Strawberry Association in translating the first newsletter so that there will be a better understanding by the Hispanic agricultural community of what's happening. ALBA also has funding for more outreach on its own because of the fact that they're in the North Monterey County area and qualify for some of the PG&E funds. And what we have discussed so far with phase two is changing the way we conduct outreach so that it wasn't based on a north-south outreach, it was more based on targeting individual groups so that we could be more efficient than this. And we had at the same time to realize that we were misusing the skills of the managers we have had hired, and that we had Kay Mercer, who is a very high technical skills as far as monitoring as such, was doing political outreach, and while she's very good at technical skills, sometimes she becomes impatient with political outreach, or she maybe has a regular level of patience, while Darlene Din has an excessive amount of patience for these things. And we need to actually change how we do these things to reach the larger group of people. And it's going to be, requires to be more focused. And there's one other thing, if I might address briefly, because it will come up next year. The new Proposition 40 and 50 grants provide for the creation of a new committee, a technical advisory committee, to oversee the monitoring. There are two reasons for this. One of the reasons was when the agricultural community originally worked with the environmental community two, 3 years ago to come up with this program, there was a concept of alternative monitoring. And this was not to say that the monitoring that's presently being done is incorrect, but there may be more efficient ways to do monitoring so that we could have broader base monitoring, or that we could actually help the farmers bring monitoring out to their farms at a lower cost basis than the individual monitoring presently envisioned. The technical advisory committee would be able to review that type of proposal and also make sure that the monitoring that we're conducting is actually effective. There has been a proposal independent of that, and independent of, or in concert with Preservation Inc., by the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, by the Coastal Coalition, by the what used to be called the Six County Coalition, Don Mathis's group, and by Mark Lasuertas of UCSC, to see if there's interest in having a forum or symposium on agricultural monitoring, particularly as it affects vegetable crops in this, and grape crops in the Central Coast, because this is something totally different than the type of monitoring that's being implemented in the Central Valley. And we're looking forward to not only have a technical advisory committee, but also seeing if we can get input from researchers in the area of what alternatives there are, so that we can see if it is possible to move this alternative monitoring forward, or if it's just something that's a visionary idea that doesn't have any legs. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, we have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you.